Bob, this poor pilot has a lot staring him in the face at this point in time. He's got terrain out there. He's got ice above. He's got low ceilings below. He's got TFRs to worry about. And he's got a list of equipment failures. When you start prioritizing, you know, what are the major issues facing this guy? Where do you start? What's this guy's biggest problem? What does he need to address right now?
Well, his biggest problem, Bob, is he is surprised. There's no way for him to anticipate what actually just happened here. So he couldn't specifically plan for this case. So there's an element of shock and surprise here that he can best overcome by taking a deep breath and settling back, not take any rash actions quickly. Think about what's happened and find out what equipment works and what doesn't work. He also should report to ATC that he's had a problem, but it's not time yet to get involved in a long discussion with them as to how he's going to resolve it. Need some time to think about this. There's no pressing issue right at the moment. The airplane is perfectly flyable. He does have his GPS, which is a key element here in terms of his navigation, and he needs to use it to stay on his course. If he has to revert to the CDI function on the HS, or on the, if he has to revert to the CDI function on the GPS, he should do that. Stay on course, analyze what's happened, and then he can arrive at a solution. But to do so, Bob, requires that the pilot have a good understanding of his systems, his avionics systems, to be able to relate what's going on to what's possible in the future.
Wally, what level of stress do you think this guy is feeling right about now, though? I mean, this is, this guy can really feel like he's, you know, drinking from a fire hose all of a sudden, isn't it?
He's got a lot of stress going on. He's been working with ATC to stay out of the icing. He's been checking weather to decide what's happening there. He's trying to route through this mountainous terrain, trying to stay below icing, and now suddenly he's got an equipment failure. And if he hasn't considered this equipment failure at some time prior, this is going to be a real confusing thing that's going to shoot that stress level way out of the top.
And you know, we all, you know, encourage working with ATC. We know ATC is our friend. But Jeff, you know, you tell ATC about your problems, and they come back to you and say intentions. What are most pilots going to do when asked that question?
Well, I think the knee-jerk response would be to go over to ATC and say, I need help. I need to get vectored for an approach. I need you to help me out here because I'm overwhelmed. And in many situations, that's going to be the right response, right? That's a kind of resource management with resources available. In this case, the best response is to take a breath and say, what's really failed here? What immediate action do I have to take? And I think we're probably in agreement that the immediate action is just don't do anything. And so the intentions are probably either, if you're not sure, stand by or will advise, put it off for a little while, or my intention is to keep going and I'll let you know if I have a problem. I think, you know, one of the things in terms of declaring an emergency that I used to tell my students is I declare an emergency the moment I need something that I can't get some other way. Right? That's what it's really about. And as soon as I need to play that card, I play that card. But if I don't have to, and if it's not going to help me, then it's not something I'm really motivated to go do. And if an emergency has to be declared so they can help me, they'll do it for me. They're not going to wait for me to do it, right? But if I need something, then I'll do it. And right now, I don't think this pilot really needs anything other than a little time to work it out.
Isn't it interesting, though, you look at, you know, whether this pilot has been in a similar situation before. How do we plan for or practice for this sort of event? John, is that something we can do? Is that something we can integrate into our flying preparation for an event such as this? Because all of a sudden, there's a lot going on.
Oh, absolutely. And this is the kind of thing that you should be practicing during your recurrency or proficiency training or whatever you're doing. Whether you have a CFII with you or a safety pilot or something, just don't go out and do your six approaches in 6 months under the hood. Try it in different configurations. Try failing an instrument. Try doing the approach with different configurations, simulating different failures. Talk to your instructor about how you could manage something like this? Suppose this failed. Suppose that failed. Suppose they couldn't, just experiment with all the different configurations. And there's a lot of stuff out there today that's available. We do have the GPS, obviously, and there's all the other non-certified equipment, the tablets and things like that that can provide information too. But the key is like the airlines, military, corporate do, is you practice all this stuff under controlled conditions, learn what works, learn what doesn't work, so that you have the tools that you need and the understanding that when it does happen, you can draw on that practice that you've done.
Bob, we talk a lot about realistic training. And really, realistic training is the antidote for this situation. But how many pilots look for a bad weather day to go out flying? You know, bad weather, stay on the ground. But truly, you really want to put yourself into a situation like this. It's not hazardous. It's not dangerous. This guy is not about to die, but he can turn this into a hazardous situation by losing control of his mind, his processes, and just how he responds. And let's not forget where this guy is in the scenario. He's had a busy week. He's a little bit tired. He's on his final leg home. How many really bad accidents, how many really bad things happen on that last leg of a flight home when we're tired and a little bit frustrated?
Well, we haven't used the word panic yet, but this pilot is subject to panic, under stress, not understanding what's really happened. His inclination would be to throw this at ATC, very possibly, which would not be a good solution here. Because again, as I mentioned in the expert response, it's unlikely ATC can really help with the particular problem that he or she has with the avionics. They may be able to offer some sort of solution which would not be in his best interest. You know, land as soon as possible if he expresses some panic, but that's moving from the frying pan into the fire.
Yeah, I agree with that, Bob. I think we as pilots, when something goes wrong in the airplane, we tend to want to get on the ground because we feel safe on the ground. But in this case, I think that would be clearly the wrong decision. He needs to fly on and analyze what he can and can't do with that airplane safely before he makes the decision as to where he's going to land.
You know, I could see only two situations in this particular scenario where he would have to get on the ground right now. He's almost out of gas or he's on fire. Other than that, think about what the potential solutions are and then go with a plan after you take a few minutes to compose yourself. Because I really think this is going to be a surprise. It's not something that he could in any way plan for and know the outcome of ahead of time. He's got to noodle on this and figure out what the best solution is.
And the interaction with ATC is going to be key here too. You do need to let them know exactly what's going on, obviously, for one. And probably the standby, as we said, is the next thing. But in the meantime, start using him as a resource and say, hey, I do have an equipment problem here. I'll get back to you in a minute. But in the meantime, can you get me like weather for the nearest five airports? What's the MVA around here? What can you vector me at? Set them to work getting some information for you while you work on it, and they come back to you and say, this is what we found out. But we're so spring-loaded, especially on the ATC side, where somebody says that they've got a problem, is to take over. First thing you're going to do is probably assign a heading and altitude and take you off the airway.
Which is the worst thing in this case.
And try to assume control and vector you for the approach. You know, every controller wants to be the hero that vectored the on-fire airplane right over the runway threshold, and they see it at the last minute and land. And that's really not what is here. The other thing is you're really going to have to be – if you decide that you're going to do the option – for the approach with the full procedure, you're probably going to have to tell a controller two or three times that you don't want vectors, that you want to fly the full procedure, and they're going to be spring-loaded again to try and help you by giving you shortcuts to the intermediate fix or a vector to final. And that can be a very strong temptation to accept that And you're probably going to have to say no two or three times.
Who's pilot in command here?
Well, and refuse the vector and tell them exactly what you need. And they're probably going to be confused by it, by refusing the vector and by insisting on the full procedure. So you're going to have to be careful that way too.
See, I think that's a really good point that you've got there, John, is, and this gets back to knowing your systems. In this case, with GPS steering, presuming the autopilot can fly the airplane for you, the most counterintuitive thing, the full procedure, taking the navigation of the airplane and giving it to a device that can't be confused and probably isn't even impaired, is a far better way to go, even though that seems like the least logical direction to go. And you're right, ATC is – that's going to seem counterintuitive to them as well. But this gets back to knowing your systems and having actually tried, flying with different items in use, not in use, spending some time with your avionics technicians so that you know what fails and what doesn't, you know, because it's entirely possible that this GPS, a GPS with roll steering, connects directly to his autopilot. Like if it was an S-Tech 55X and a Garmin 430W, they don't even know under GPS steering that the HSI exists. You could take it out the airplane, throw it out the window, and it would still fly fine. Whereas there are other installations, you had a S-Tech 30 or a Cap 140, and now maybe GPS steering doesn't even work. So that's a huge difference on what you're going to do here based on what you have installed in the airplane. And how often do you go out and fly the full procedure under automation, right? I mean, that seems like the biggest waste of time you could have. I'm watching for a long time a bunch of sequences that are automated.
Anything.
I'm not doing anything. And that's exactly what needed to be practiced here.
Well, I think at some point, addressing John's comments, it's probably necessary to explain to ATC what your plan is and why you're pursuing that.
Right.
In very basic terms.
And that could be a challenge.
Yes.
Because, again, most controllers aren't pilots. They're not going to understand
And
this.
It might be as simple as, I want to do the approach in this fashion my autopilot will fly.
And maybe that's where you got to declare the emergency and say,
this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
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 But that's a plan born of confidence. I mean, we're talking about a plan born of confidence
and training.
It is. Yeah. And that's a wonderful pie in the sky solution. And ideally, that's what this pilot is going to do. I have a problem. I'm ready for the problem. And this is what I'm going to do. Okay, real world, this guy has put himself in a bad spot because of his flawed plan. Let's look at a little bit about what this guy did. I mean, he put himself in this situation, whether above, whether below, terrain here.
He put himself in a tunnel.
He really did. And how often do we not have a VFR option out there? I mean, we all have the get out of jail free card. You know, I'm going to go to where the weather is good and put this thing on the ground. Not an option here. So this guy, we really have to look at, the real devil in this picture, and sometimes it's the person looking back at you from the mirror, you know. And it really is, this guy really didn't have a good plan because he did limit his options. Having said that, it's not a real serious issue right now. And I think that's the part that sorts out, you know, and needs sorting out. And calling for the timeout. I mean, I love that scenario. You know, you look at the athletes and the game. You know, the game comes down to the last 10 seconds. They're all calling a timeout because they need to slow down everything. And in this case here, we want to be ahead of our airplane. Are we ahead of our airplane at this point? Not even close. You know, we're falling further and further behind as we get more and more confused. And there's a lot of confusion here right now. I mean, all our instruments just keep, you know, doing stuff that, you know, that has us, you know, instead of giving us good information that's reinforcing, you know, we're getting more and more confused. So I think what we really need to do is start looking at what is the best of the options available. And how do we do that? Wally, how do you sort out in this situation the best way to go?
Well, Bob, if this pilot knows his systems, we've had a lot of time to sit here in these chairs and discuss it. If this pilot knows his systems, he soon realizes he really doesn't have a serious problem. But you're absolutely right. If he jumps to conclusions and moves fast and attempts to make a quick approach or something, he could turn the flight into a real disaster. So that's the first thing. You need to know your airplane. And I think, Bob, you make a point of practicing or learning by pulling circuit breakers and not using them as regular practice, and that's excellent. Just because your manual says your airplane works one way doesn't mean your airplane's going to work that way. You know, many of us have these older airplanes. Radios have been removed. New ones have been installed. The new ones have been removed. Another one has been installed. They've been rewired by a lot of people. So you really need to know how your airplane is going to behave. And it's my experience doing instrument competency checks and instrument rides that pilots don't tend to dig that deep into whether my autopilot will work if my HSI is stuck. Will my GPS steering work if the HSI doesn't work? All of these questions that we're discussing here, you've got to dig through them if you're going to fly single engine airplanes in mountainous terrain and instrument weather. You know, you need to know that.
So, you know, as I'm listening to the discussion here, it's pretty clear to me that how you handle the situation will have been dictated about, you know, what you had done, you know, in all of the time leading up to it. You know, how well did I practice? How well did I study systems? And how competent are most pilots with regard to knowing and understanding the systems on their airplane? I think it's a weak area. I know in my case, it's always a challenge, you know, especially with this ever-changing world. I mean, the avionics, Jeff, are changing so fast, you can't keep up with them. And so knowing what you have and what you don't have and the impact, the total impact on you flying this airplane to achieve the desired results.
It gives you context in which to evaluate your problem, knowing the systems and how various parts of the systems interrelate. Gives you some context which you can use to evaluate and come up with a solution.
And I can look at this scenario with a Wally Moran getting this issue, and based upon, you know, who he is, what he is, you know, okay, I'm going to calmly proceed, land, and, you know, it's a non-event. But there's many pilots that this will take right to their limits, won't it?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And I think the element of surprise and panic is really an issue here to avoid the impulsive responses that might be possible here.
And the confusion factor also. In this case, I think it would be pretty obvious what it is. You know, the HSI is you can't even move it. You've got a flag. But what about the more subtle things, like when you've got two instruments that disagree? And which one do you believe? And that, again, goes back to your training and knowing what's, you know, the classic, like a static system failure or something is not really intuitive all the time. Now you've got instruments that are slightly disagreeing with each other and trending in a different direction. So that can lead to a more subtle confusion where you're trying to compensate for something that is slowly failing. So again, it's that understanding and practicing all that different stuff.
But in the meantime, aviate, navigate, communicate.
Yep.
Keep that airplane flying upright.
Yep.
And point it in the right direction.
Yeah, you might call this a wind the clock scenario. I used to know a B-52 pilot who he said whenever they had a situation that came up, the first thing they were supposed to do was wind the clock. They actually had a mechanical clock. And the reason was it was to prevent a rash action. So firelight, engine 7, wind the clock. Is engine 7 really on fire? Let's look over. No, I'm not seeing any other indications that it is other than that light. Do we have a bad light or do we really have a fire? You know, and therefore I didn't shut it down without knowing that I've got that issue. One of the things might be for the pilot to just take that breath, as we said, and say, is this an emergency where I have to act now? Getting to your point, Bob, how do you calm yourself down? Do I need to do anything right now? The airplane's flying, I'm not in the ice, it's motoring along, I'm on course, I'm on radar. No, I don't need to do anything right now. All right, so this is just an abnormal situation. It's not an emergency, and I can sit and think about it for a little while. And then that's the first step for anyone who's got that panic to bring themselves back down and prevent a rash action.
And that's also managing that stress level.
sometimes the hardest thing to do
is nothing.
Is to do nothing.
Yeah.